dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. I'm very pleased to be able to catch up with one of the most thoughtful observers and indeed one of the combatants in the office of the Secretary of Defense for a long time in that war. He is Dr. Harold Rode, one of the really serious analysts and scholars and practitioners of public policy with respect to the Middle East for many years. We catch up with him in Jerusalem, appropriately enough, as it is in the heart of what is happening that we want to discuss with him. And Harold, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's always great to have you with us.
Frank, thank you very much for having me, and thanks for that marvelous introduction.
Well, it's heartfelt and well-deserved. Let's start with what I think of as a Mideast in flames and the role of its chief arsonist, arguably, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Yesterday in Turkey, he was elected to become the next president of Turkey. Talk a little bit, Harold, if you would, about who this individual is, what he's been doing in the 10 years as premier of Turkey, and what we might expect of his presidency.
Well, he's been an ally of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is largely Arab, but he's been a realist, strong ally for many years, even before he was prime minister in 2002. And he has been an ally of Qatar and Hamas. And the truth is that he's very, very unhappy. He's an Islamic fundamentalist, and he's not particularly happy with the West. Now he's been elevated to the presidency of Turkey, which is, frankly, a largely symbolic post. Now, the question is, why would he be willing to do this? And this may actually be good for us. And here's why. He wanted originally to change the constitution where all power would be put into the presidency and he would have it and therefore, frankly, become almost a Turkish sultan. In fact, his victory speech last night, he said, "My victory was important in Turkey and it was important." He mentioned all sorts of cities in Syria and in the West Bank. And in Israel and Jerusalem, it's all the same. That's his goal, to be that. But here's his problem. There are an awful lot of corruption scandals that he faces. And if he were to continue as prime minister of Turkey, he could very possibly lose immunity because if his party breaks apart, which is what I suspect will happen now, he could eventually find himself on trial. But he acquires immunity as president, even though it is, again, largely a ceremonial position. He will not be able, given the forces arrayed in Turkey as they are today, it's very unlikely that he will be able to change the constitution to become dictator, sultan, or whatever, which is what he wants. But he's bought himself years of protection as the president. That is why it was so important for him to be president now.
Let me ask you, Harold Rode, because you are, as I say, deeply knowledgeable about Turkey and how the various forces at work there in its governance are interoperating and mutating. My concern for some time has been that given the forceful personality of this Erdogan, and the appeal that he clearly has to lots of so-called conservative Turks, mostly, I gather, in the rural areas, non-secular, Sharia-adherent, more or less at the very least, that he will, in fact, be able to, over time perhaps, but he will be able to generate the kind of ruling coalition that will give him the authority to change the constitution and morph his post as president from this more or less ceremonial operation into something that would be a force for greater and greater autocracy.
Well, I know that, I'm sure you're right, that's what he wants to do, but we should also, we have to do analysis based on not what some people want, but what is possible. And it would not surprise me that his party falls apart right now, because there's enormous infighting. He needs two-thirds of the parliament to change the constitution. I doubt that he's going to be able to get that two-thirds.
Can he alternatively effectively achieve what he seeks, as Vladimir Putin did in a similar kind of gambit, by having as the prime minister a factotum, someone who will do his bidding reliably and be entirely under his control?
Oh, I'm sure that that's what he'd like to have right now. But in Turkey, the people understand that he is weak. And the result is, in the Middle East, when someone is weak, that's when they go in for the and pounce. So it could be, but I frankly, if you're, I'm not a betting man, but if you made me, I would bet against him.
Okay, we'll be watching this one closely, Harold. When you speak like Smith Barney, people listen, and I'm very keenly interested in what's coming next. We'll follow it closely with you. Let me turn to another topic that I know you're also on top of, Iraq. There are reports that Prime Minister Maliki, another discredited and arguably weakened individual, is now in the midst of what amounts to a coup in Baghdad in the face of the ISIS struggle and so on that we'll be talking about shortly with Michael O'Hanlon. Let's get your sense of what's actually happening on the ground at the moment in Baghdad.
Maliki has proven that he cannot work with the other ethnic groups in Iraq. Maliki is a Shiite. There are many Shiites who hate him. The Sunnis hate him, and the Kurds hate him. He does not have the ability now to form a government. Now, in parliamentary societies, it is usually the largest party which is asked to form a government. Well, he's been trying since the elections, if I recall correctly, they were on April 30th, a long time ago, and he has failed. Now, he is wants to take the president of Iraq, a Kurd, largely a symbolic post, he wants to take him to court, because you gotta make the largest party. He got to give him the opportunity. Well, he's been given, and he's failed and failed. I can't see how he's going to succeed. And frankly, the Kurds hate him. The Sunnis hate him, and many Shiite groups hate him. There are other candidates who know how to make Iraqis work together, the different ethnic groups. And the one that is, as far as I'm concerned, the most likely, and doesn't mean he's going to be the prime minister in the end, is Ahmad Chalabi, whom we at the Defense Department, a lot of us worked with in the periods before the liberation of Iraq in 2003. There are all sorts of people who say, oh my God, he's working with the Iranians. But I must tell you that every Shiite works in some way, has a relationship with the Iranian government, whatever the Iranian government would be, these terrorists who are running it now, or the Shah before, because the Shiites are a minority, fearful population within the Islamic world, and Iran is the largest country. So what, in larger Shiite country?
It's Harold, I'm going to run out of time to talk with you about one other thing, and Ahmad Chalabi is a very colorful character, and I think we have to have you come back and have a long chat about all of these aspects, because we can't do them justice at the moment. But just very quickly, I know you're in Israel at the moment. Peace negotiations, or at least a ceasefire, is supposedly under discussion in Cairo. Bibi Netanyahu is in a lot of trouble, I'm told, with people in Israel, both in his cabinet and elsewhere, for not finishing the job with Hamas. What do you make of the present situation?
Well, I can't comment on the details because I simply don't know. But what I do know is, in the Middle East, it is extremely important to win, and then you talk. You don't talk before you win. Otherwise, they see you as weak, and they continue to pound you. Now, how all this will play out is beyond me. I don't know what to say. But Hamas and the other Arabs must understand that Israel is the most powerful country in this area and is willing to do what is necessary to protect its interest.
Yeah, I fear they're drawing a different conclusion, Harold. And again, we'll be following this closely, as will you, I know, on the ground there in Israel. Be safe. We'll look forward to talking with you at greater length when you get home. In the meantime, Harold Rode, formerly with the Coalition Provisional Authority and for many years, 28 years, in fact, with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, a true national treasure, now a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute. Stay safe, Harold, and come back to us again very soon. Michael O'Hanlon is up next. We'll talk about the campaign against ISIS and the Obama legacy. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.